Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. We will start with an announcement. Barry Wen, one of the folks in our Facebook community, announced that as curator, his next exhibit will be devoted to the sword and sandal genre. Hercules and the Rise of the Peplum Films, it will be called. The genre lasted from the late 50s to the mid-60s, but continued to influence cinema in the 80s, and I would argue even today. I've been examining the career and genre favorite Steve Reeves, and will also be devoting space to the others who played Hercules, like Reg Park and Alan Steele. I know their fans are out there. Yes, indeed, they are, Barry. And I'm glad that you're doing this exhibit. We have one of Barry's other exhibits connected to Sword and Sandal Cinema, and that is his own Herculean arc featuring Alan Steele. And now for a quick song, Golden Bough by Ginny Pitt.
Golden Bough.
That was Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley. And now, without further ado, Ron Carson's Coliseum. Greetings and welcome, Ron. How are you today?
Good evening, Sadafa. How are you?
Doing well. And Andrea, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. A little exhausted, but well.
So it's good to hear from you guys.
It's been a
while.
Well, let me start.
I know.
Let me start with some distressing news, gang, being that you also both own animals. I'm mourning the loss of our cat, Patches, who passed away this afternoon up in Housatonic, and I'm just totally devastated.
I'm sorry, Ron. I'm so sorry. I know, it is devastating. I'm sorry.
The beautiful thing about it is that she actually spent her last moments with me. She knew. She was waiting for me.
Yes, they do. They do wait. You know, they could live to be 50, and it's never enough. It's never enough.
She was only 16, as Sam Cooke used to say, Andrea.
Yeah, well, actually, 16 is a good age, you know, because they're living longer. We're taking better care of our pets, and they're living better lives. But they just don't live forever, unfortunately. I've come to learn that about when I lose one of my pets. They just don't live forever. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your loss. I know it's difficult, but you will heal in time for sure.
Thank you, Sweetums. And with the help of you and Hercules and everybody else, I've been getting a lot of support from my Facebook friends on this as well.
Good.
I knew there was something wrong because when she was lying on the floor, you know, she couldn't get up, and then I put her on the bed. And I took a nap, and she was still around, thank God. And then finally, when I put on the TV to watch Perry Mason at 4 o'clock, she actually was there with me up until the end of that episode. And after 5, she expired. And I managed to take one last picture of her before she left us, and I'll treasure that photo forever and ever. And she was a very, very wonderful companion, and she was also, you know, a fixture to the house, and it's not going to be the same without her right now.
Yeah, of course.
No, it's difficult, but I feel your pain. Having lost so many of my own, I feel your pain, but you gave her a good life. Just remember that she would not have had the life that she had if she didn't have you, and you need to remember the good life you gave her.
Well, she was actually my caretaker, John's cat, who had her since she was 2 years old. And I lived with her for 4 years, Andrea. And,
I know. You were very close to that cat. Yeah.
Very close to her. And I'm just like feeling her loss right now. And I know Hercules can, you know, sympathize with me because he's lost some of his feline friends, too. There's only one left now. The last time I was over, Ghost is the only cat he has. The other felines that were with him in Athena are also gone too. So you can associate with me on this, Xadalfe. Oh,
of course, they're family, and when you lose family, but pets. I've had many pets in my life. They do have, as Andrea said, short lives, and so try to make their lives as good as we can make them. And store up a lot of good memories. They're with us forever in our hearts.
That's right. They are. I still remember my dog from my very first dog. You know, you never forget. They're always there. But there's a reason why they don't live forever or as long as humans do. It must be a lesson that we learn that we need to accept the things that are out of our control. When they do decide that it's time to go, we need to let them go. And they're tired. You know, what happens is they get, when they're that age, they're tired, and they're basically saying, you know what, I'm done. I've given all I can as your companion, and now I'd like to rest. And that's the way I think about it. They've given their all, and now they're tired, and they need to move on to the next realm.
She didn't do too bad for a cat who in human age was 96 years young, you know?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. 16 is a great age. Yeah. Yeah, I had a dog that lived to 16. So yes, it's a child. 16 is a teenager. You know what that lives with you. Your pain will get easier, Ron. It really will. Trust me, it will. I'm sure Hercules
Well, like
can
I
agree
said, when
yes,
I like I said, I have I've got my big brother. I've got you, Sweetums. I've got all my support from everybody on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, I posted a
good
thread that she made the Rainbow Bridge, and at least I was happy
exactly.
enough to say that. She waited for me until I came home before she left.
Yeah, exactly.
And that
exactly.
was important
so
to me. Very important to me.
All right.
So
well,
in memory
you're,
of Patches, we'll dedicate the show in her memory. How about that?
Sounds
wonderful.
Thing.
Let's do that. Sounds like a good
okay.
thing. All right.
So this show is dedicated
and
to
with
Patches
that,
and Sister Lee. And today I hear that both of you prepared something showing how the Greek and Roman gods are related to each other.
Yeah,
yes.
I have a chart in front of me on the – I got a chart in front of me giving you the Greek name and the Roman name and the role they were playing in the mythological era. So let's get to some business over here. Andrew, I'm going to start with you. Ladies first. Go ahead so I can compose myself
okay,
a little bit here.
Well, the all of 5 minutes I had to research this, which actually, Hercules, just a question for you. I had asked Ron this question before our last month's show, hoping that I could get to that. Is there a movie that incorporates both Greek and Roman mythology in one movie? I was hoping that there was something like that. Do you happen to know that?
Well, Greek and Roman mythology are pretty much the same thing. It's Olympian mythology. The history
okay.
of the gods in Rome are a bit different, and they started as purely Roman gods, but the Romans adopted the Greek way of understanding the divine, and after that,
right.
the Greek gods and the Roman gods became the same. So Zeus became Jupiter or Jove, and so on, as you guys will be explaining, and the myths became incorporated into themselves, but the Romans had a different view of some of the gods, like the Greeks looked down on Ares, who was called Mars
right.
in Roman mythology, and Martis in the mm-hmm. Etruscan. And the mm-hmm. Romans' glorified war looked very highly upon Mars.
Right.
So,
right.
So the gods had slightly different functions, but the mythology is the same. And in time, it grew to be indistinguishable.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you.
So, but there
I'll tell you one.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Andrea. Go ahead.
No, there isn't a movie that actually will show you some kind of connection like that, though. Is there?
Not
Any
that I know.
Movie?
Not an entertainment movie. There are tons of scholastic movies made for kids in
right.
school about the Greek mythology and Roman mythology that will state that. So in scholastic
right,
films,
right.
you'll find it, but in entertainment films, to my knowledge, they haven't done anything like that. There
okay,
you go. You have an idea.
Okay, Ron, go ahead.
Make a film about it.
Yeah,
well, we are talking to the son of Zeus right now as we speak.
That's right.
Heracles,
that's right.
Hercules,
yep.
Heracles,
that's right.
the son of Zeus, even though his real father was one of the coolest individuals you'd ever want to meet. I'm talking about my uncle/godfather,
Your uncle.
Gus. Yes, who mm-hmm. was the nearest and dearest man in my life. And like I said, I used his name as the principal character in my first completed novel, which I'm retooling
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And just one chapter away from getting that all said and done. And hopefully now
Great.
As things change in my life that I will be attending area book signings and very much so giving people this compilation of short stories on an ugly time in Greece where the Nazis actually occupied a lot of parts of the country, including our island Limnos, and
mm-hmm.
of course my action shifts over to the capital city of Athens, because that's where all the pretty much the
mm-hmm.
the heart of the action takes place there, and I figured right now we're we're one step away from getting the book retooled, and hopefully we'll have it published, and eventually you guys will have your autographed copy down the road too.
Very cool.
Wonderful. Looking forward to it. Great, great, great. Okay, so Ron, you said that I should go first. Okay. Of course, you know,
yes.
Like I said, the five minute research I was able to do, the first thing I researched, of course, is my favorite Greek goddess, and you know who that is. That is the famous Medusa. Of course,
yes,
looking
correct.
And see how the Romans looked at Medusa, and of course, and I say this, of course, being Roman, of Roman heritage, the Romans, being the barbarians that they were, did not give her the benefit of the doubt. Of course, we know that poor Medusa, as beautiful as she was raped and was then turned into a hideous creature thanks to Athena, who was jealous.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas the Romans, being who they are, said, no, she started off being an ugly Gorgon, one of three sisters. So they didn't even give her the possibility of being beautiful at one point. They just made her hideous creature from the very beginning. So I found that kind of funny, since, like I said, I am a Roman descendant. Yeah, that's pretty much the way the Romans would have thought of it. So they wouldn't even have thought of her as being the innocent victim and then turned into a hideous creature. Right away, she was hideous from the very beginning. So,
well, the Roman identity for Medusa is Gorgo, actually.
Right,
I'm
Gorgo,
sure,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure Hercules knows that for sure. So, let's also focus on some other gods, including Odysseus, which was also known as Ulysses, and that stands for Greek hero.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have Ilios, a.k.a. Sol, the god of the sun. And we also have Pan, which, unfortunately, that was a name that my cousin was given before Hercules, and he couldn't stand it. Do you recall that, Kvadelfe?
Yes, those parts of my life are past, though, so I don't really like revisiting them.
Yeah, okay. Faunus was the Roman identity of Pan, and he was the god of shepherds also. And the namesake of your wife, Athena, is also Minerva in Roman, and she, of course, is the goddess of wisdom. And his wife have smarts, for sure. I can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. Minerva, yeah.
We also, let's not forget our friend from Lemnos, Hephaestus, who is, in Roman terms, known as Vulcan, and he is god of the forge. And he was based on our island also, because Hercules and I were definitely very, very instrumental in doing a lot of research on Hephaestus. So that's another identity over here. Hades was known as Pluto, the god of the underworld. Of course, Aphrodite was Venus, the goddess of love, as Frankie Avalon used to say, many moons ago.
Hey, Venus. Yeah.
Yes, hey, Venus. Great song, too. Poseidon was Neptune, the god of the Poseidon was Neptune, the god of the sea, and Hera, Zeus's wife, Juno, in Roman, goddess of marriage. So then a couple of more.
Oh, goddess of marriage. I didn't know there was a goddess of marriage. Interesting.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. The only god that has the same Roman and Greek name is Apollo, believe it or not, who was the god of music and medicine. He is the only one in this list that has the same name in both genres.
That's right. Wow. That's interesting. I didn't know that. Wow.
And, of course, we have Dionysius. Of course, we have Dionysius, Dionysus, a.k.a. Bacchus in Roman terms, the god of wine, and Eros, of course, Cupid, the god of love, Hypnos, Somnus, the god of sleep.
One step back. Cupid is really his Greek name?
No, Cupid is the Roman. Eros is the Greek name, Eros.
Eros was the Greek name, and his Roman name is Cupid?
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that was actually his name. Oh, okay. I thought that was like an Americanized thing. Okay.
No, you learn something new every day in this program.
I did. Absolutely. The only one I knew was Apollo because of the Apollo Theater.
Oh, yeah. Well, a great venue, which is still going strong at 125th Street in my old hometown, Andrea.
That's
I'm telling
right.
you, that place
yeah,
is still
yeah.
a rocking place for sure.
Yeah,
A-Train.
Okay, go ahead.
Excuse me. The A-Train takes you right to 125th Street and is within walking distance of the subway. And a lot of history was made at the Apollo Theater. A lot of it.
And the famous Duke Ellington's song, Take the A-Train, because of the famous Apollo Theater.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nothing like the standards,
right. Okay.
The big bands.
That's right.
The Great American Songbook, the same material WNEW-AM used to play way back when.
That's
the sounds
right.
of
That's
swing.
Right. Okay, go ahead. So we left off at Cupid. I interrupted you at Cupid and Eros,
yes.
So go ahead. Who's next?
We've got Artemis, a.k.a. Diana, the goddess of the hunt, of course.
Uh-huh.
And Demeter.
One of the seven great wonders of the world is the Temple of Artemis.
Yeah,
that's
you know
correct.
That.
And Hercules' yes. niece is named Artemis, too, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yep. My
okay.
cousin Penny's first child was named Artemis, and I guess it's very much
oh.
with the Greek connotation, of course. There's also
mm-hmm.
Demeter, whose Roman name was Ceres, goddess of the harvest. And then we
mm-hmm.
also go dark with Hades, a.k.a. Pluto, the god of the underworld. In other words, he mans
mm-hmm.
the flames of hell, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I know.
He's more an underworld god. It was a pre-Christian mm-hmm. concept of the underworld. And Pluton actually means riches, because all of the riches, all the metals,
correct.
And all the gems are found deep inside the earth. So there's an expression, ola anikon ston adi, everything belongs to Hades. Because it
mm-hmm.
does. You can't take
wow.
any of it with you, so it stays here.
All right, another goddess who had...
And Ron, wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Ron, a question. And so
yeah, go ahead. Cerberus
is being the guardian of the gates of Hades. Does he fit in there at all as some kind of a
Cerberus is not
a
on
god
the list,
or...
though.
Okay, he was not a god. He was just a guardian
yeah.
of the gate.
Yeah,
yeah
okay.
he was just a guardian. He was not a god or a goddess. So
right.
we can rule
okay.
him out in that particular
right.
realm of category over here. We also
right.
have another god and goddess, actually, who actually almost has the same name in Greek and Roman, Persephone,
mm-hmm.
who in Roman is Proserpine.
Persephone.
Yes.
Right.
Well, I say it the Greek way.
Right, yeah.
And she's the goddess of the underworld also, just to let you know. So I figured we'd stick with the same topic
oh, wow.
right there.
Wow.
So, yeah, wow.
The god and goddess of the underworld. Wow,
correct.
I didn't know that.
There's a god and a goddess.
Okay.
Yes, we do have two of them, one male, one female.
Okay, interesting. Is that the only
more
male,
ways...
female, is that the only male-female combination of
well,
god
if
and
you
goddess?
Want to count, if you want to count Zeus and Hera, being that was Zeus's wife, we can put them on the list as well, too.
Well, yeah, but he's a big guy.
He's a big guy, no doubt about it. Just,
hey,
and he's not Mr. Carlson from...
Yeah, you're right. Taking a few steps backwards, you mentioned Demeter.
Yes.
Demeter, okay. Now, coincidence, Demeter was the name of the boat that Dracula traveled
yeah.
on. Did you know that?
I knew that.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So where's the connection there? That's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure they patterned Bela Lugosi to that character for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah, for sure.
We also have a mother and son team in this list as well. We have,
okay.
what do you call, Rhea, who is in Roman Ops, the mother of Zeus and
mm-hmm.
the wife of Cronus. And then Cronus, his
mm-hmm.
Roman name is Saturn, who is the youngest son of Uranus and Zeus's father also. So there's another one we can add. There's three sort of couples over here that are of male and female descent that you can put on this list as well. So, and we already discussed Ares, the god of war, and Hermes, Mercury, the messenger of the gods, as well. And there's also Gaia, G-A-I-A, Roman name Terra, who was the goddess of Earth.
The goddess of Earth?
Yes.
Okay. Oh. Wow.
And
that's
I take it back over here. There's another name that is on both Greek and Roman that I oversaw over here. It's Uranus.
Oh, really?
Father of the Titans, yes. So that's two people on this list that have the same exact name in Greek and Roman identity.
Wow.
So I kind of oversaw that.
So interesting topic, yeah. Very interesting.
Well, we thank you for kind of like bringing it up when you messaged me on Facebook earlier today as to what we're going to be discussing. And I think this is a pretty interesting comparison in more ways than one.
It is. It is. I've learned a lot. I learned a lot, and I knew some of it, and I learned a lot more. And a lot of this, relating to music, a lot of this is, of course, when you mention Mars, the first thing I think about is the planets and Pluto, that they are both immortalized in music by the famous composer Gustav Holst, which is absolutely one of my most favorite pieces of music, and I've performed Mars. It is not an easy piece to perform, but very well interpreted as the bringer of war. So
yeah, well, that's where Ares comes in. He's also known as Mars in Roman identity, and he, of course, is the god of war. And ironically, one of my cousins' name was Ares, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
Yep, we called him Artie, of course, God rest his soul. But his Greek name was Ares. So, so there's another comparison with family over here. So, but there you go. I think we just about summed up this entire list, gang.
I think you did.
I think
and
it was fabulous.
Just in the nick of time, we have a minute left.
Okay.
Well, thank you so very much for putting that together. Of course, that's the beginning. There are so many nuances and levels to this particular exploration that we could talk about them for months and still barely scratch the surface. But thank you for introducing the topic, and I'm sure we'll be coming back to it. How can people find you, Ron?
Well, I'm on Facebook, of course. All you got to do is type in the toolbar, Ron Carson. And I will be able to take your friend request. And if you do, I would appreciate you drop a note of condolence for our four-legged friend who left us earlier this afternoon. And I'm also on the Social Business Network LinkedIn. Same thing. Type in my name on the toolbar. And I would like to connect with you in more ways than one. And I would appreciate it very much that some of your audience would come in and I can become friends with them as well. And of course, Andrea, there's only one of her all over Facebook, of course.
You're correct. There is only one of me. There are other beautiful Tutrani girls there, but I'm the only Andrea.
Correct.
Yes, and I'm only on Facebook. I do not use any other social media, and I like what Ron said last time. I don't tick and I don't talk. So
there you
Facebook
go.
No, that still applies. There's no way I will tick, talk, or tweet.
And on that note, we must say goodbye because our other segment's
about
to start.
Thank you, Hercules.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Andrea. You're awesome. Have a great weekend.
Have a wonderful evening yourself.
You do the same.
All right.
You do the same, Sadelfe, and I will talk to you during the week. And again, let's all say a prayer for my four-legged friend, Patches, who is already sorely missed.
Indeed we will.
Have a great evening.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Bye.
And now for our second segment, we'll be with Brian Walker of Brian's Drive-In Theater. Greetings, Brian. How are you?
I am well tonight, Hercules. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. Moving forward with the new MNN show. You and I are going to have a conversation about that in the very near future.
Sounds
I'm excited.
Good.
It's good when you're excited.
Well, I am back from vacation. It was
welcome back.
It was a 2.5-week affair. A very pleasant one. I must go back to the office tomorrow, but I'm working a hybrid schedule until the end of June when I officially retire. So
wow.
I'm kind of on I'm on easy street right now. It feels pretty good.
June will be here before you know it. It's almost June now.
Well, yeah, I mean, Memorial Day weekend is this weekend. So, yeah, it's coming up pretty fast. And I'm pretty good to myself. So I have another trip planned, my retirement trip.
Oh, awesome.
Well, the first of many. But this one, since it's July and I make my annual pilgrimage to the Great Lakes in the month of July, we're heading up to the Great Lakes for about 2.5 weeks. And we're going to hit four out of the five. Yeah, we're going to hit Michigan, Superior, Huron, and Erie. Sorry, Lake Ontario, nothing against you. We're just not going to be that far east.
Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
Well, and, you know, since I've been on vacation, you know, I'm sort of in, you know, we were at the beach for about a week and a half of our time. I'm still, brain-wise, I'm still back at the beach. And I was, you know, thinking about, you know, our last conversation and beach movies, and I thought, gosh, where do those intersect with peplum? And it can very conveniently intersects with Peter Lupus, and that's who I thought we would talk about tonight as our topic.
That is awesome. I look forward to it.
And Mr. Lupus is going to have a birthday in about, I don't know, three and a half weeks. He'll be 91 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. By all accounts, a health nut. A big believer in vitamins and natural bodybuilding, of course. Started acting in the early 1960s. He's from Indianapolis and owned a gym there and won some titles, and Mr. Indiana, for example, Mr. Indianapolis as well. And started getting some, acting work, acting jobs here and there. Did some summer stock and things like that. And appeared in some early 60s television. But his first film came in the American International release, Muscle Beach Party, from 1964. And Muscle Beach Party has a great cast. And Peter Lupus, he has a big role in it. You know, he's the, he's the antagonist, you know, in a sense. I mean, he's not a bad guy, you know, by any means in the movie, but he's sort of in the way of, domestic bliss there, on the beach. And I love these old American International beach party movies. They're a lot of fun. And this one's got a great cast. I mean, not only is it, Frankie Avalon, Annette Funicello, but it also has, Luciana Paluzzi, who is one of the villains in Thunderball. And she's a great, Bond girl in Thunderball. If you like James Bond movies, she's one of the, I think, better adversaries in it. It has, if you like comedy, it has Buddy Hackett in a role, and also Don Rickles Don Rickles is the leader of the bodybuilder troupe, which, the irony of it's kind of fun. But it's a really fun movie to watch. Peter Lupus had signed a contract with AIP to make a string of movies, and this was the first of those movies that got released. And he's shown off to a very great extent, I should say, in the film, and it sort of paved the way for the four Peplum films that he did for American International as well. And have you ever seen any of those?
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, if you go to the Peter Lucas page at Brian's Drive-In Theater, you can see one of those. That's
awesome.
Right. You can see one of his Peplum movies. I hate to say it's not the greatest copy that's available, but it's the title of it is Hercules and the Tyrants of Babylon.
Oh, wait, I did see that one. I had that one on DVD.
Okay, well, that is public domain, so and that's the reason that I can display it on the website via archive.org. But it's also a fun peplum, and he did four for American International.
I might have all of them if I have to find that one.
Well, you may well have. There's Goliath at the conquest of Damascus. Helga Linné is in it, and she's one of my favorite 1960s European female film stars. She can handle roles where she's good at horror. She's good in peplum films. She's oftentimes one of the evil queens or something like that. And she's really good in everything, and a real journeyman actor as well. She was a single mom with two kids, and that's how she paid the bills, was acting. So I have much respect for Helga Linné, and really love the films that she's in. And Helga Linné is in Hercules and the Tyrants of Babylon. He also did the Challenge of the Gladiator and the Giant of Evil Island, which is in that gray area between peplum and adventure. Not that adventure isn't inherent in peplum, but it isn't quite so peplum based. It's at the end of the peplum era too. It's 1965. And I think, some producers tried to bridge the gap into something else, something more swashbuckling,
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the other movies that you listed, and I don't recall if I've seen those, especially the one with Damascus.
Okay.
I don't remember the Damascus movie ringing any bells.
Well, and you, as you and I have talked, sometimes one film will have 10 different names.
Very true.
And that's the name that I use for that particular film. Now, I might be overridden by better information, but that's what I'm going with. Of course, we all remember Peter Lucas from Mission Impossible. When I was a kid, that was one of the things. That was one of the television shows we routinely watched. It's late 60s, early 70s. And Peter Lucas became a real breakout star in the television series. The first season, Peter Graves wasn't in it. And when it went to his second season, they picked up Peter Graves and changed the format. And the show was a hit afterward. And Peter Lucas was with it. Yeah, and Peter Lucas was in it from more or less from beginning to end as Willie Armitage. The size of his role would vary from week to week because they did Mission Impossible did have an ensemble cast. I mean, it had a pretty solid cast to rely on. One of my favorites, who's in Ed Wood, Martin Landau, was also a big cast member for a while in Mission Impossible. And for people who like sci-fi and are probably about my age there again, they would definitely remember Landau and his then wife, who was also in Mission Impossible, Barbara Bain, in Space 1999.
Yes.
Did you ever watch that?
Yes. That I remember, Space 1999.
It was, you know, like you know, practically all productions, it was done to a particular budget.
And yes.
Space 1999 was a particularly lower budget. But even at that, you know, it still had fans. It still has fans. Actually, I think we've got a complete DVD collection of Space 1999 somewhere.
Wow.
Somewhere here in the house. I wouldn't doubt it. We've got Mission Impossible. Mission Impossible was a really fun show.
Yes, it was.
Very enjoyable. Like I said, great ensemble cast. It wasn't just Martin Landau. After the end of Star Trek, Leonard Nimoy transitioned immediately from Star Trek into Mission Impossible. In a very interesting character. Linda Day George, who was practically ubiquitous in 1970s low-budget drive-in films and in hours and hours of television, is in it. Sam Elliott was in it for a while, who is still, you know, still in films, still has a very viable career. Leslie Ann Warren, Lee Merriweather, Sid Haig, who you know, sort of became a cult figure,
mm-hmm.
you know, toward the middle of his career. He was in everything from Spider Baby to It's a Bikini World. He's in a Beach Party movie. He's in early 60s horror. He's in a Bond movie. He's one of the henchmen in Live and Let Die from 1971. He's in one of my favorite horror films. I mean, he's House of a Thousand Corpses,
uh-huh.
about 2003 or so. Sid Haig kind of did it all, you know, really. Had quite a career for a character actor. Lee Merriweather, who was in Barnaby Jones, also has a story arc in Mission Impossible as well. So like I said, you know, great ensemble cast. And the way that a lot of those shows worked is that they would roll from cast member to cast member. So somebody would be in a spotlight, you know, every week. And then the other characters were more ancillary, you know, to what was going on, which made sense if you've got such a strong, you know, Greg Morris, I forgot to mention him. When you have such a strong cast like this, you know, you sort of have to give everybody, a moment to act, you know, to perform their craft. And so Peter Lupus was in some episodes more than others, but you can also say that about Martin Landau, Barbara Bain, Greg Morris, you know, and everybody else in the series.
Yeah, those are fantastic series. I remember growing up with them, and I was immersed in them to a greater or lesser degree. I love the peplums, and I also love science fiction and horror. So some of these shows weren't in my normal range of watching things, but I would occasionally watch them because they were good.
Yeah, Peter Lupus was one of those actors who did it for a while, full time, and then later on it became just a, kind of a part time endeavor for him as he had some business interests, to tend to as well. So after Mission Impossible, he didn't work as much because he had he'd done it. He had that experience and decided to move on, and he still kept an oar, in acting as well. He's famously in the television series Police Squad from the early 1980s, and he did a few episodes there. And you can see him in things like Fantasy Island, Love Boat, BJ and the Bear, some late 70s, early 80s favorite TV shows. But like I said, after Mission Impossible, he just sort of cooled his acting career and went back to his business interests, which makes sense. You have fun with a particular career path, and I'm at the end of one right now. And then it's time to move on to something else. So I feel right now, I feel sort of a kinship, you know, with Peter Lupus at the end of his contract with CBS.
As do I, as new doors are opening up and taking me further into certain areas that I've explored, and even full circle into things that I've done, like returning to MNN. That's from over 20 years ago. I was on MNN, so it's a really strange full circle that I never thought I'd return to.
Yeah, it is interesting that life's not as linear as we would like to think it is.
No, I don't believe so either.
And I would love to think that as well, but it doesn't always work out that way. There is a more of a cycle to things than I would like to think that there is.
Yeah, me too. Now,
yes,
I was thinking of another beach party connection, although it wasn't like a beach party thing. In the beginning of Samson's Mighty Challenge, or the Return of Hercules, as it was later redubbed, and the princess is on the beach with her attendants, and that's kind of like a beach party type of scene. And then Alan Steele stumbles across them and starts off his adventure in the film.
I hadn't thought about that. Now, one that I had thought about is Gordon Mitchell in one of his later films, Dinosaur Valley Girls. That to me sort of has a beach vibe-ish, thread, running through it. But Peter Lupus is in an actual American International, beach party movie.
Okay.
For me, that gives him a lot more street cred. He's in a movie with Annette Funicello, Frankie Avalon. They were particularly Annette was one of the series staples. She's not in every beach party movie, but she's in the majority of them. Frankie only did like the first three or four, I think the first four. And then he had gotten a better offer, was doing movies with Bob Hope, I'll Take Sweden, which he's featured in. And, he made a stab at a bigger career, and he left them behind. And sort of left it to Tommy Kirk. Aaron Kincaid, his career rise came sort of at the end of the beach party era, which was actually fairly short-lived. It was only about, I guess you could say about 4 years. I would say three, but a couple of my favorite beach party type movies didn't come out until 1967 because they were shelved. So I'll have to put it anywhere from 63 to 67. Shorter-lived than the Peplums, for sure.
But still, they seemed like the Peplums to have lasted longer, I guess, to my young mind, because they were on TV for a long period of time after they had
been. And you know what? And mostly outdoor settings as well. Yeah, so there is that similarity, too.
Maybe it would be great to make a beach party movie with some of the horrors that have been introduced into beach settings, like sharks and, some sort of horror film that celebrates the beach party and at the same time celebrates all the post-beach party atrocities that take place on beaches.
Have you ever seen a movie, it's a comedy from about, let's say 20, 25 years ago, called Psycho Beach Party?
No, but I've seen Geek Maggot Bingo, which was a beach party that parodied.
I have not seen that.
Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon, and there was somebody named Moondoggy in it. I only saw it once during the days of mom and pop video stores, and I haven't seen it since then. I look for it every now and then. Like, I look for Psychos in Love. That's one of my favorite really low-budget horror films.
Well, Psycho Beach Party was written by a drag performer named Charles Bush, who has done a lot of film. He was in Oz, the HBO series in the late 90s. He has been on Broadway. He has done a little bit of everything. And he wrote and stars in Flacco Beach Party. And it's sort of a takeoff on Gidget. Lauren Ambrose is the character, sort of the main character, and her name is Chicklet in it. So there again, you know, it's a takeoff on Gidget. And Charles Bush is a policewoman in it with a past. It's a really funny movie. It had a lot of back then, you know, sort of up and coming actors. And there, it's close to 25 years old at this point. I think it came out in about 2000 or so. So that's we're just a couple years away from its 25th anniversary. It's a lot of fun, though. And since it is a takeoff on Gidget, and there is, you know, there is a mental illness thread that runs through it, and a series of murders, you know, to keep it more interesting. It's fun. It's well acted. It's campy. It's corny in spots, but really well worth watching. It's a good hour and a half's worth of entertainment. I highly recommend it. I love Charles Bush. Charles Bush did a few other films that I think a lot of as well. But Psycho Beach Party is a lot of fun, very accessible too. In the same way that Hairspray made John Waters accessible to a bigger audience, I would say that this film probably would have done that for Charles Bush had it been more widely viewed, that is, more successful. And, you know, when people who suddenly became fans of John Waters went back and watched Polyester, they were a lot of them were revolted, which I think is just hysterical. By the way,
I like his earlier films. They were very shocking.
Well, my favorite is Multiple Maniacs. We should talk about John Waters at some point.
Yes,
in one of the Brian's Drive-In Theater. But Multiple Maniacs is my favorite John Waters film for sure. But I got to tell you, Psycho Beach Party is probably my favorite Charles Bush film. How about that?
Well, thank you. now I need to seek it out if it's accessible and watch it. Is that on YouTube or Tubi or?
This movie's so old, we have it on DVD.
So, to tell you the truth,
I have no idea where it is streaming-wise. It's got to be somewhere, I would think. It's got to be on Prime or I would certainly hope so. And it used to be fun. It says watch on Strand releasing with Prime Video channel. So I think you can get to it through Prime.
Yeah, I have Prime. I rarely watch Prime since I got Tubi though. Tubi has all sorts of really strange movies with strange titles and some old things that you've seen and forgotten about. It's a fascinating place to explore.
And you know what? So many people have recommended Tubi to me, and I just haven't had the time. I know that I need to check it out. It's on one of my list of to-do things, but I just haven't. I've never gotten there with it. To tell you the truth, I don't watch much television. You would think that I would. I watch things situationally.
Me too.
There are certain programs that I see, but I'm not parked in front of the television all night long. I don't see a lot of new stuff, which is a shame, because I do watch older programming, older films and such, more than the average bear. So I don't get to see a whole lot of new stuff, but on July 1st, I'll have more time. So who knows? Maybe
I work out and I answer correspondence while I'm watching TV, which means that I'm not actually watching a lot of the TV.
Paying attention. You're only seeing about half of it.
And, so I do other things. And Sometimes I'll have to re-listen to or re-watch something to get, you know, all the nuances of what happened. But Athena explains to me the, you know, the things that I've missed visually. So that works pretty well. And I don't really watch a lot of TV either. TV is something I watch with Athena as we, you know, wind up our day for like an hour or two. We'll either watch a movie or we'll watch some shows. You know, like right now we're rewatching Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I have never seen an episode of that. No, never. No hate or anything like that. I'm aware of it, you know, but I just never saw an episode of it.
Yeah, it's fun. And again, I don't particularly care for like high school shows or high school movies, but that starts off with them in high school. So I guess it's unavoidable. Mm-hmm. And I like the Angel, the spinoff series, a lot better.
Oh, okay. Okay. I've never seen that either, but there again, I'm aware of it.
Well, we're running out of conversation time for now, and I'm saddened. Because I'm discovering new things, and you've given me a lot to think about and to look for on Amazon and Tubi. How can people reach you before you retire?
Well, before or after I retire, for that matter. You can reach me on social media. I'm on Facebook, and all you have to do in the search box is type in Brian's Drive-In Theater, and it will take you straight to me. I'm also on Twitter, but I only lurk on Twitter. And at some point, you know what, I may expand my social media over to something more visual, such as Instagram. I was in a snit about something that happened to me on Instagram a few years ago, and I guess I need to get over it and rejoin. But for right now, Facebook is the best way to get a hold of me. If you want to visit the site, if you want to come to the drive-in, just go to briansdriveintheater.com. You can get there via any search engine or just type it in, Brian with an I.
Thank you, Brian. You're incredibly awesome, and I enjoyed our conversation today, like always. I wish you the best with your retirement and with all your up-and-coming projects.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope that you and I are going to be involved in a few of those projects.
I'm looking forward to that as well. And thanks to our wonderful audience, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Brian. Say hi to Greg.
Have a good evening, Hercules.